constant themes I run across is shame, avoidance, ego, and it takes a long time to be able to really develop the trust within the individual to be able to have those conversations. And I'm not at all going to be able to espouse it. I know how to really do it from a therapeutic side, and that's kind of why I'm expanding upon the knowledge. But I think it takes time to develop that personal relationship. Just think of it like if you with your girlfriend, right? You're not going to tell her day one, open up all the things that you worry about within yourself on your day-to-day life. And especially when you're talking about money, it's a very intimate subject.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Danielle Beasley, whose focus is on helping clients understand their money so that they can focus on their meaning. She was a guest on this podcast in September 2021, when we spoke about her focus on financial literacy, as well as her approach to financial planning. She was recently accepted into the Behavioral Financial Planning and Financial Therapy Spring 2024 cohort at the University of Georgia. And I asked her back onto the podcast to talk specifically about what financial therapy is and how it is delivered. Welcome, Danielle. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Ethan. It's so nice to reconnect.
Well, welcome back onto the podcast. Before we launch into the field of financial therapy, which fascinates me, can you bring us up to date on what you've been doing for the past 2 years since we first spoke?
And you also have a podcast, which you were kind enough to invite me to appear on.
Absolutely. So as you know, I'm very passionate about financial literacy, and I co-authored a financial wellness coloring workbook for young adults. But since the research telling us that our money mindset is set by the age of 7, I edited it for children ages 6 and up, and it's called Money Maestros. So any note to parents that are listening, we need to start young and we need to start at home and make every moment a teachable one. So besides working on promoting financial literacy, I have my own RIA, 20 Concierge Wealth Management, where I work with individuals and families on improving their financial well-being. Part of that is creating a Monte Carlo scenario and a financial plan, but most of the time it's spent on conversations around how their behaviors and limiting beliefs get in their way of actually transacting the financial plan. You know, after transitioning from the institutional client to working exclusively on individuals, I realized very early on that with this group, it's not just about the numbers. When we make investment decisions, science has shown that we make it with the emotional part of our brains. So when I was talking with my institutional clients, it was always centered around how many basis points did we beat the benchmark? But conversely, with the individuals, while yes, those numbers are still important and investments are kind of what drive the increase in our net worth, but what clients are most interested in and what every study out there that will point us to is they are focused on their holistic financial well-being. So I encourage individuals to know and to nourish their own worth, self and net worth. And thank you for mentioning my podcast. I'd like to thank you for being our first guest. And the beautiful thing about having a podcast is you get to step out of your day-to-day job and have conversations with individuals who inspire you and focus on topics that you're interested in learning about. My conversations ultimately led me to this group on financial therapy, and it sparked a desire in me to expand upon this knowledge. I'm currently studying to sit for the CFT1 exam that's administered by the Financial Therapy Association. And as you mentioned earlier, I'm enrolled in University of Georgia's first of its kind. It's a master's certificate in behavioral financial planning and therapy, where there will be an experiential component, and we actually will deliver financial therapy to fellow UGA graduate students.
That is absolutely fascinating. A few things. First of all, thinking about the age, you mentioned the age of 7, I would never have thought, and I've had 7-year-olds, and I can only imagine that I haven't addressed it early enough with some of my children. But that is remarkable that those kind of behaviors and maybe beliefs around money can be set down so early. And also, I think it's fascinating the difference you draw, because I also have made the shift from the institutional side to the private wealth side. And I never thought about it in terms of that human component, the psychological component. But I would also think, what are the pieces of that relationship that are then become very important? Thinking things like trust, being able to assure a client that their money is in safe hands. Mm-hmm. What are the components that you build up in terms of trying to build that confidence?
Well, trust is very important. And I'll say the sales cycle on the individual side is much longer because you have to develop that trust. But really, I think you have to break down those walls and those barriers, because constant themes I run across is shame, avoidance, ego. And it takes a long time to be able to really develop the trust within the individual to be able to have those conversations. And I'm not at all going to be able to espouse that. I know how to really do it from the therapeutic side. And that's kind of why I'm expanding upon the knowledge. But I think it takes time to develop that personal relationship. Just think of it like if you with your girlfriend, right? You're not going to tell her day one, open up all the things that you worry about within yourself on your day-to-day life. And especially when you're talking about money, it's a very intimate subject. People don't like to talk about money. Even I have conversations with individuals. I'm not going to talk to my 7-year-old about finances, right? Where I think we need to normalize having these conversations with our children and with our clients and with our family members to kind of remove this mystique of nobody can understand my financial picture, when the reality is we all have to deal with money. Even billionaires need budgets, and we all have emotions around these things. And so if we can normalize having these conversations, maybe clients will open up to us more, you know, and we dive deep into their family, because just like through intergenerational trauma, in other sense, financial trauma kind of carries forward in those conversations as well. And it takes a lot of time and skill to be able to unpack those things.
So interesting. Well, that was, of course, what led me to want to have you back on the podcast, was because I actually hadn't heard the term financial therapy before. So can you just, backing up a little bit, maybe tell us about this emerging field and, for example, what the content of a course focused on it would look like?
Mm-hmm. So let me define financial therapy as it's defined by the Financial Therapy Association. It's an interdisciplinary practice informed by both therapeutic and financial competencies. It's an amazing group of individuals. There's only 400 members in the association. There's only 90 CFTs, but it was founded by a bunch of pioneers 15 years ago, practitioners, academics, and therapists, where the science, and it's led by the science, right? We know that making investment decisions are emotional. There's amazing books out there on behavioral science and decision-making and psychology, but as practitioners, we're never really taught the skill set on how to address those emotional aspects. And so these pioneers that started it, Dr. Christy Archuleta, Dr. John Grable, they were at Kansas State. Now they're at University of Georgia. I encourage individuals to go to the Financial Therapy Association website. I'm assuming that we can go ahead and link this, but Kansas State has a phenomenal program, University of Georgia. There's also a group in Golden State University. And if you go on there, and I'll also mention there's a financial therapy journal. So this started 15 years ago. There's only 400 people in the association. It takes 30 years to make a new profession kind of acceptable in the industry. We're seeing chief behavioral officers, fractional chief behavioral officers. So we're kind of seeing it. Our industry loves credentials, right? There's 500 credentials. And what does that really mean? So FTA is really the organization that's driving, formalizing this actual career group. You can get these credentials. And I think it's very exciting to be at the forefront. We're not at the end of the marathon. We're just year 16 on the way to 30. But I think you're going to be hearing a lot about this in the future.
So interesting. Now let's look at the future. So, because I'd like to kind of look at this in the context of the evolution of financial planning. Where would you say we are? I mean, you use the analogy of a marathon, something I'm quite familiar with. So thank you for that, as opposed to a baseball game and its innings, which I'm always slightly less familiar with. But where are we in terms of the wholesale adoption or wholesale recognition of this human-centered financial planning approach? How do you think that's being the traction that that's getting across the industry?
Well, I think, and since you understand this, I mean, it has to be a fee for service. So if you are on the broker dealer side of the equation, firms like that, they could never be a financial therapist. They're not necessarily going to be delivering that? And maybe I should even take a step back. What is even financial therapy, whether it's in a clinical setting? What I've seen is a lot of licensed financial therapists, they will work with a practitioner. They might be, their core competency is on the financial side of things. They may pair with a therapist and pull them in kind of on harder cases, right? Where it's a team approach. I've seen firms, they hire chief behavioral officers where they're going to sit in with all the advisors and kind of have, think of it just like you go to a therapist's office, right? Where they're going to have conversations outside of looking at the numbers and diving into those behaviors that are getting in their way. I was just at the conference last November. I saw representatives from all the big groups, JP Morgan, a little bit from the other side of things. But what's great about FTA is it's really a community of academics. So all of their work is really driven by the science, which to me is very important. And I'm fascinated by how the brain works. And so that's really important to me. So it's driven by the science. And then it's a beautiful culmination of both disciplines, the therapeutic side of things, and then the financial practitioner. So it's trying to create a community of a marriage of both of those things. So again, whether it's you hire a CBO or you outsource a CBO, or you deepen your skill set in being able to recognize those limiting beliefs and to be able to help your clients get unstuck. I think we're just at the forefront of it, but I think that the numbers are going to compound annually. I think there's 100,000 CFPs out there. So kind of as comparison, this is very, very new in the industry. So I don't know if I had, by the time we hit that 30 year, I don't know, let's guess there's 1,000 or 2 of us out there.
And I'd love to just dig in a little bit to the nature of financial therapy. So does everyone need therapy necessarily? Or is it just some clients? Or is that just a broader term for just understanding their particular psychology of money? And just like in our traditional form of therapy, we see that as something that sometimes lasts forever, but sometimes can be targeted around a specific issue and there can be a recovery almost. So do you see that you can affect change through this therapy around money? And what are the issues maybe that you might have to tackle?
Well, certainly, I think that is the hope, because even in my personal life, it was when you serve the institutional market, you know you're winning is if you beat that benchmark. But with an individual, I mean, we all cognitively know in our brains that we need to be saving more, that we need to spend less than we're earning. We all know those things. But it's really creating an awareness and a certain level of emotional intelligence to be able to stop yourself in the tract when your ego is coming to play, or if you made a bad decision, to be able to remove the shame, to be able to move forward. So I think that I really see a need like in couples. I work with couples, but often only one person tends to drive the conversation and show up. So some of my associates that are in the association where they really work with couples and there's a lot of conflicts. I mean, what's the number one reason for divorce? And the former president of the FTA, Ed Combs, he has a podcast for the Love of Money, and he really focuses on this. And I think it's a beautiful thing because couples have conflict. And if the number one reason for divorce, and Dr. Megan Ford, I think she's doing a research paper right now on if we actually start doing this therapy when a couple is coming into conflict for money, can we save them from getting a divorce? I think she's in the middle of it. But I think that is the intent, to be able to create an awareness, to create an outlet for individuals to seek help, to be able to get out of their way and pause before they make those emotional decisions when it comes to not only investing, but money. And I think that just like everything in life, if we have resources and we have tools and we have science that back it, things have got to get better.
So uplifting. And interestingly, I saw today Sally Krawcheck's firm Alvest has introduced a course planning service. So I guess sometimes when it's inevitable, it's good to have the counseling that is very focused on, in her case, women's experience of divorce and ensuring they get the right impartial advice that they need. So definitely a complex area where therapy may well come in many aspects of it. My last question is, did anything surprise you when you embarked on this journey
Anything that forced you to think differently yourself, perhaps, at how you view certain financial aspects?
Well, I think what surprised me is I've just gone into a deep dive about all of this. It's not really new. It's not really new to be talking about investing is emotional. And as an advisor, you know, I first sat and I took my Series 65. There's no conversations around how to deal with people's or how to coach people's emotions as they're making these decisions. So I think what surprised me is that it's really that we are formalizing this as a profession and we're having more conversations and firms are popping up delivering the fractional CBO services. I think that surprised me. I'd say another area that just kind of touched my heart was walking into the room when I went to this conference in November of FTA. I have been to countless industry conferences and maybe I make a connection with a person or two, but it's very ego-driven. What is your strategy? How much are you beating the benchmark? What's your AUM? But I was overwhelmed by the love and the curiosity and the community that this group of individuals have, and they're truly dedicated to improving their clients' financial well-being. There's no egos. And I can't tell you, I just made 100 friends when I walked in that room, and I'm deeply connected to the community. Also, what has surprised me is I post a thing on LinkedIn, which is fabulous, our social network, and the curiosity from other advisors and other colleagues that I work with. What is that? I'm interested in that. Can you tell me a little bit more about it? And so I love just having these conversations and being able to bring awareness and kind of be hopefully at the forefront of the change in the industry where we can really focus on providing human-centered advice.
Well, that is definitely a movement that I can get behind. It is so heartwarming to hear about people approaching you proactively, like I did, keen to hear more about an area. So often in our business, eyes glaze over and it's not perceived as something that is engaging. So I think that is certainly an improvement and a turn up for the future. So thank you so much, Danielle, for continuing to be such a voice for the human-centered financial planning side of things and for your commitment to engaging, learning, educating yourself first and foremost so that you can educate the rest of us. Thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you for having me. As I always say, never stop investing in yourself. It pays the best dividends.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.